Texas, Fort Worth, Texas. And I got sober with a bunch of old rednecks in Texas, and they used to say, if you don't give your sobriety date, it's probably because you don't have one. And I believe that there's three things that are necessary to be a member in good standing of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I am a member of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is that I have a sobriety date, and I just gave that to you, and that is that I have an AA sponsor, her name is Ellen Aldridge, and that I have a home group, and that's Monday night Seal Beach Speakers Meeting. And I'm really grateful that I was taught I needed those three things. I am just stoked. I am just so happy to be here. And I just love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been so excited about coming to Atlanta because there's a lot of people that live in this area that I know, and a lot of those people are here tonight, and it's just fabulous. And I'm going to, last night you guys got to hear Bill. I didn't get in till midnight, but what a treat. Is he great or what? I mean, he's just, yeah. He and I were in Rapid Cities, South Dakota a little while ago, and we got to go to this wildlife development or center or whatever you call those, and we got to feed baby bears. And I mean, you know, you just kind of get to know somebody when you're sitting there, you know, burping a bear. And it's just kind of, it's fun. And I get to be here with Juanita, and Juanita and I've been here together before, and same with Sterling. And I'm really excited to hear Bob. I haven't heard Bob before, so I'm getting really excited about that. And John, thank you so, so much. John called some time ago and invited me to come to Atlanta, and I'm just so happy to be here, and I just appreciate the accommodations. And I don't care if the hotel's, you know, coming apart or we look like we're in Beirut. If you're around these kind of people, you can't be anything but happy. I mean, it just does not get better than this. And I'd like to thank Marge for her constant communication. That was fantastic. I mean, you've got a fabulous committee that really takes care of everybody. And Pat and Mark picked us up at the airport last night. Now, you know, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about what an order. I can't go through with it. We came in at midnight. So what an order. I can't go through with it. So thank you, thank you. And they got us checked in, put our bags in the room. And it's, you know, it's Southern hospitality. And something happens to me when I get in the South. Something just happens to me. And I live in Los Angeles, and I love living where I live. But I can tell you, there is just no people like the people in the South. And I just love the South. And I'm here with my husband, Dave. And that's Dave. Up, Dave.
He did it!
He never minds, but he did. So that's great. And I've also feel so privileged because we've been planning this trip for a really long time. And I'm here tonight with two of the women I sponsor and one of the women I used to sponsor and even stayed with me for a while. And that's Amanda. She came out and stayed in California for a while. And Vicki and Michael. And these women drove here to see me. And I can guarantee you, 19 years ago, nobody was driving anywhere to see me. And, you know, that's the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, is that you get to have this kind of love. And now Michael's from California, but I met Vicki and Amanda by coming, having the opportunity to come to the South and visit with you people. And it's just so... Just keep that Southern hospitality, because I guarantee you it's not everywhere. It's just not everywhere, and it's just so wonderful when you get to come and you get to feel that. You know, I can remember growing up, it was come on to my house, and where I live, that's not the way it is. You don't even know who your neighbor is, and you're just really blessed, and it's just really wonderful to be here. I had a birthday in April, and I turned 19. And my husband had a birthday in April, and he turned 20. And Dave and I have, to some people, would probably say that life hasn't been that good in the last few years. But I don't feel like that, because the only thing that's not the same as it used to be is the monetary stuff. It's, now, I'm not going to get up here and advocate poverty, okay? Because I've had it both ways, and I still like money better. But but it's like we've learned so much, and I'm just feeling so good, and I have felt that way for a while. And the thing that's happening in my life right now, and I just want to tell you, newcomers, somebody's sitting here with a few days sobriety, or maybe you're having your first year and you think, my God, that's the very best feeling I'll ever have in my life, is to have a year of sobriety. Well, I'm telling you, at 19 years of sobriety, I am more active than I've ever been. I sponsor more people than I've ever sponsored, and I'll tell you why. At 19 years of sobriety, I have so much more to lose. And I am so in touch with how much I have in my life. My life is so full, and I've been blessed so much. I ran into a man outside, and I might have acted just a little bit funny, because his name is Melvin. And Melvin, if I did, I'm just really sorry, because Melvin was with me at the very worst time of my life. And if you've ever heard me talk before, you hear me talk a lot about Russ and how my son Russ. And I talk about the day that he put those scissors in his stomach, and I was standing at a podium in Albany, Georgia, and I stood at that podium the morning after that happened, and I was torn down. And I just looked, you know, and I looked at him, and he said, I haven't seen you since Albany. And I'm thinking, how different. It just a wave of gratitude went over me. Because I'm going to talk about Russ, but the difference is that Russ is back in California, lives like 10 minutes from where Dave and I live. He and his wife, Cheryl, and they're expecting their first child in September. And the miracle is that Russ hasn't done those things anymore. And that's all because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. And the miracles, and this is what happens happens in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You can travel all over the country, and you get to feel those feelings, and you get to share those times. Because right now, tonight, my life is the best it's ever been. And I don't know what life has to offer. But you see, what it was with me is I never could do life. I just couldn't do life. And I'm really grateful today, thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, that you've taught me how to do life. And you know, I'm not going to let this day go by. I've let a lot of days go by because I have played with my head, and it was a good day. Because I know what a bad day is. And I want to enjoy the good days. And the good days are real important to me today. But you see, I used to have a head that would take away the good days. And I'm really grateful that I haven't let that happen today. I've been able to spend time with my husband, and if you're a busy member of Alcoholics Anonymous, that's tough, is to get a day with your husband. And Dave and I have just been just looking at each other like we were 16 and 17 years old, you know, because it's just fun. Because what happens around our house is that a normal day at our house is get up at 5, go to work, come home, throw some food in your stomach, and go to a meeting. And take, you know, and fill 50 phone calls during the day. There's not a lot of time to talk to each other. So, but we wouldn't have it any other way. Because you see, if it wasn't for that, we wouldn't have this. And I'm really grateful. I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had a God, but it wasn't like the God I know today. Because you see, and see, you guys understand this, because I was born and raised in Texas. A lot of times people don't understand this, but you guys will. Here we go. Excuse me a minute. I'm a loud mouth. I need some water. But I'm a recovering Southern Baptist. And see, when you come to the South, they know what I'm talking about. But what I've also learned is that Southern Baptist Church never did tell me anything I shouldn't have heard. Because what I've learned is that I've got this hearing problem. And Clancy has told me what that hearing problem is. That hearing problem is because I have a disease of perception. I don't hear things the way they really are, and I don't see things the way they really are. You see, my perception of reality is distorted. And my mother still goes to that Southern Baptist church, and she has never heard the things I heard. Never. But somehow I thought that I had to go through those people to find God, and that God lives somewhere up in the sky. But I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he gave me the big book. And in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it tells me where God is, and it says that God is deep within. And it tells me how to find God, and it says to search fearlessly. And today, God, as I understand him, expresses himself to me through the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I also have a higher power who's got a dynamite sense of humor. I don't know if you guys have that. I mean, you know, I always say I have this 11th hour higher power. The neat thing about it is I begin to trust that no matter what, it's going to work out just perfect. And today I know that everything is in perfect order. The world is turning perfectly. And you know, I used to hear Chuck Chamberlain say that everything is in perfect order. And today I believe that with all my heart. Because you see, I've always thought that these horrible things had happened to me. And today I know that there's no negatives in God's world. It's only my perception. Because you see, every single thing that has ever happened that I thought was the worst thing that could happen has turned out to be the very best thing that could happen. And I didn't know that I was an alcoholic. And when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you have taught me so much. And I had all these things that I hated and that I was really embarrassed about and that I was so ashamed of. And one of the things was my name. I hated having the name Polly. Now, I don't know if there's any sensitive people here tonight. But I don't like to be teased and I don't like to be laughed at. Or I didn't used to. Now I love it. I just absolutely love it. Because I know the more you tease me, the more you love me. And I just love it. But I hated having the name Polly, and I didn't like things like Polly wants a cracker and Polly Wally Doodle all the day. And I was also one of these little kids that had a zillion zits on their face. So, you know, it was pizza face. And I just hated things like that. And today, I love having the name Polly. And God, I'm so grateful I don't have the zits anymore. And because I can walk into rooms with this many people, and most of the time if somebody says Polly, I'm pretty sure they're talking to me. There's just not very many Pollys in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I knew I was a drunk, and I knew I was a lush. And I used to drive down the freeways in Dallas, Texas, and I used to pray to God to have heart disease or cancer or something, because I knew that I was dying, and I just wanted to die of something respectable. And today I know that the disease of alcoholism is my greatest gift, because if I didn't have the disease of alcoholism, I wouldn't qualify for the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything I am or hope to be, I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. 15 years ago, I married Dave. Dave's last name is Pistol. My name is now Polly Pistol. Newcomer, we have a rule around here called Rule 62. Just don't take yourself so damn serious. I will assure you, you cannot walk around on planet Earth with a name like Polly Pistol and not learn to lighten up. So. I'm really grateful. I am also living, breathing proof that you can come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and not come from the disease of alcoholism. I'm really grateful because I've had nobody to blame this on. I can't blame it on my alcoholic father because he's not alcoholic. I can't blame it on my alcoholic mother because she's not alcoholic. In fact, they're so not alcoholic that my daddy died at age 60 with 60 years of sobriety. My mother is 78 years old, and she has 78 years of sobriety. And if you think they're the least bit impressed with my 19 years of sobriety, they're not. Or my mother's not. My daddy's dead. But the thing that I have learned here is that alcoholism is a disease. And there are a lot of things that happen to all of us that contribute to the people we are. And I'm so grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous have the ability to heal, I believe, just about everything that happens to us, including major illnesses, because what it does is it helps us to look at things in a different perspective. But what I would like to tell you is not coming from an alcoholic home. And I am not only did not come from an alcoholic home, but I am an only child. And I was absolutely loved and adored. And if there was any kind of abuse that was ever done to me, it was simply that I was loved too much. But I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, my daddy was an angry man, and I've seen rage. I know what a rageaholic is. And I believe that the only difference between my dad and I is my dad just didn't take a drink. Because I know what his kind of anger is. And I don't know if you're the kind of alcoholic that looked at your parents and said, I'll never be like that. Because I did. Except I was worse than my dad. And I believe my mother was real, she was a wimp. And I used to just get so angry at her because she wouldn't stand up and, you know, for herself. And you know, I'm really grateful for a man like Dave, because I guarantee you I was not going to be a woman like my mother. I mean, I wasn't doing nothing for a man. And I'm grateful that I don't have those feelings anymore, that I don't have to keep fighting that fight. And you see, my perception of reality, I saw my mother as a wimp. And I always say I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous the worst of both my parents, an angry wimp. And I definitely was. But what I would like to say about how I felt when I took a seat in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is I had the same feelings that I have heard shared with me with the women I sponsor. And those feelings were, nobody loves me. And nobody cares. And I would have bet everything that I had or knew that nobody loved me and nobody cared about me. And the reality is that I was so loved and I was so adored, but I was so spiritually ill that I had not a clue what was wrong with me. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about a spiritual malady. I know today that I suffer from a spiritual malady. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about being cut off from the sunshine of the Spirit. I'm so grateful today that I know that I am spiritually ill. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that when you are suffering from a spiritual malady, nothing is enough. You could not love me enough. You could not give me enough. You could not do enough. And what I'm so grateful for is that I was 2 years sober when my father died. And, you know, and I didn't even realize how young 60 was. My father was 60 years old. And I was so grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because, you see, I knew that my mother and my daddy loved me. And I had never known that if I hadn't have come to you. Because, you see, the reason I didn't know I was loved, it's because I was so spiritually ill, and I was sitting around waiting for somebody to do it for me. And when I do that, I cannot feel love. I cannot feel love until I'm willing to reach out and do something for you. I sponsor a woman in California, and she just can't seem to get happy. She's always unhappy. And I've told her, I said, you know, you need to work with others. You just need to go see if there's something you can do for somebody else. And she said, well, I don't care about anybody else. And I said, that's why you never get better. There is no magic here except one alcoholic helping another alcoholic. And by doing that, by feeling that love, and the 12 steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous give me the ability to reach out and help another alcoholic. And then the magic takes place. There's a magic in these rooms, and Dr. Bob used to talk about it. He said it's the magic, it's the language of the heart. It's where the heart speaks and the heart listens. And I'm so grateful, because there's been other things I've heard in AA that I consider totally, well, I won't say it, BS. And that is, I hear things like, you have to love yourself before you can love somebody else. I'm here to tell you folks, if I ever waited around until I love myself, I would never be helping anybody else. I need to reach out and thank you. That is psychobabble. This thing about, I'm going to do it for myself. Doing for myself got me a seat in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not start to heal one iota until I began to help another person. And it's not important that I want to. It's not important that I feel anything. It's just important that I do it. And what Clancy says, if you take actions contrary to the way you feel, those actions will change your thinking, and your thinking will change your feelings. And today I understand that. This is a program of action, and it is absolutely imperative that I take the action. And I'm so grateful today that I understand. And you see, those women that I've worked with felt exactly the same way as me. So today I know that the disease of alcoholism, regardless of my life experiences, tells me that nobody loves me. And it's not until I have the ability to reach out and help another human being that I can begin to feel some sense of self-worth. I'm grateful today that I've heard from speakers who are a lot more sober than me that tell me that just some days they feel that self-worth. It's a lot more days today than it used to be. I don't feel like the lowest human being or the lowest thing on earth all the time today. I used to feel that way all the time. But today I don't feel that way all the time. And that's only because the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But if you're waiting around till you love yourself and you get self-worth before you do anything in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm afraid you're going to be sitting a long time. Just get out there and do it. Just do it. And I guarantee you, if you start working with another person, you'll feel better. No matter what's going on in your life, you'll feel better. At 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer. That's why I love to talk with these people that are in the military. It's Sterling and his wife are just living apart all the time, and I understand that. And I just knew that I had found my knight in shining armor, and we were going to sail off into the sunset and live happily ever after. And I don't know about any of you other women, but I'm here to tell you, this is nothing prettier than a man in a uniform. And it just looks like that guy could just really take care of you. And I'm a person who's never wanted to be responsible for myself. I don't want to be responsible for myself today. But Dave doesn't want the job either. So I have to be responsible for myself. And I had to learn to be responsible for myself because this man was going to be gone. And he was going to be gone for years at a time. And I was going to have to learn to take care of myself. Now, I was one of these people that was always waiting for you to love me and to take care of me. Now, when I come to the South, see, I know you guys know what I talk about when I said I used to puff up. And, you know, in Southern California, I have to say, I used to feel sorry for myself. But I used to puff up, and it would be your responsibility to find out what was wrong with me. And then it would be your responsibility to make me happy. And if you didn't, I knew you didn't love me. And I love what Clancy says. He says that we're people who have to be treated special just to feel average. And if you don't treat us special, then we feel rejected. And I totally understood those feelings. And I just knew this man was going to take care of me. And I had to learn to grow up. And I took a drink of alcohol. And it wasn't a big deal. I love to hear Dave talk because he, you know, he talks about taking a drink of alcohol and he chased that feeling until he found the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not my experience. And I don't even remember much about the first drink. I know that we talk about progressing to the morning drink. I didn't progress to the morning drink. Simply started with the morning drink. And when in the Air Force we had these things called coffees, but they served more than coffee. So it was Bloody Marys and screwdrivers in the morning, sherry before lunch, martinis before dinner, and Black Russians and Stingers after. And it never occurred to me for a really long time there was anything wrong with my drinking. I was one of these people that didn't even know I was an alcoholic till I couldn't stop drinking. And if you just hang around the rooms long enough, you'll find something that will tell you about you. And I saw a sign in an Alano club that described my alcoholism. And it said, "The chains of alcoholism were too soft to be felt until they were too strong to be broken." I didn't even know I had a problem till I couldn't stop. Along about 1962, we're living in a place called Loring Air Force Base, Maine. You ever been there, Sterling? Armpit of the universe. I had these two little boys. It's 50 below zero outside. I have not a clue how to be a parent. I don't know what to do with these children. And they're driving me crazy. And I'm having a nervous breakdown every 20 minutes. And I went to an Air Force doctor, and he said, "Take these." And from 1962 until 1977, I drank alcohol. And I took Librium and Valium and Seconal and Nemutol. And I'm here to tell you, if you take those kind of drugs and you drink alcohol, you are not an active alcoholic. I'm married to a speed freak. And I tell you what, I have never in my life understood anybody to take drugs to vibrate. That just... I have not ever understood that. See, I'm the kind of person that has never, ever wanted to suit up and show up for life. I just wanted out. I did not want to live life. I just wanted to go to sleep and just not do anything. I just didn't want the responsibility of life. Now, I have a son who's recovering in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've had the opportunity to hear James. And you see, I talk about being a couch potato alcoholic, but that's not really funny to James. Because you see, from the eyes of a little boy, that's very different. Because my son talks about his mother being passed out on the sofa. But you see, he doesn't know she's passed out. And this little boy walks back and forth, gripped with terror, because his dad is gone and he's certain his mother is dead. That's the disease of alcoholism. And I believe with all my heart that this is a family disease, and that anybody who lives with a practicing alcoholic suffers from the disease of alcoholism. And I think sometimes we always are talking about the first 164 pages of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, but sometimes I think we forget to read the family afterwards. And I think we forget to read to the employer. Because you see, if I am hiding out in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I am denying my family the same things that I denied them when I was drinking, how have I recovered? And I believe that it is very important that I absolutely be the very best mom I can be, that I be the very best daughter I can be, and I be the very best mom I can be. To practice the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous says these are the things that I must do. And it is very important to me that I treat my family as they deserve to be treated. And it's very important that I give my family the same amount of time as I give the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm grateful for that, because you see, I wouldn't have that family if it wouldn't be for you. And you have taught me how to do those things, because before I didn't know how to do those things.
And it's you that has given me that ability. I had to learn to love you and to do for you before I could do for them. I don't have a big drunkalog. I nearly died from the disease of alcoholism, and I'm going to briefly tell you about that. But I don't have a big drunkalog. I slept through it, and you would have too. Because you see, I grew up, I was a military wife. And I can tell you that it was not appropriate behavior to be drunk and disorderly. It was very necessary that I act a lady all the time. So I didn't go to parties, and I went there, but I did not get fallen down drunk. And I don't know if you've ever had to do any controlled drinking, but I would go to a cocktail party not knowing what was wrong with me, but knowing that if I drank too much, that my behavior would be unacceptable. So what I would do is I would just sip on a drink. And I can tell you that still makes the hairs on my neck stand up. And then I would just go home until I could drink all I want and pass out. I didn't know an alcoholic until I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. All the people that I knew in the Air Force, there is nobody that's an alcoholic that are in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and furthermore, there's nobody that needs to be. I didn't know anything about the disease of alcoholism. I just knew that there was something wrong with me. So what I would do is I would drink at home. I have been through the program, through treatment 3 times. I am not a person that walked in these rooms and says, geez, I think I'll get sober. I entered treatment for the first time after I had totaled an automobile in Euless, Texas. And my husband said to me, he says, Polly, I hope you enter, there's a treatment center, it's not far from my house, and I'd like for you to go. And I entered this treatment center. And I will assure you, it was no fancy jitter joint. This was a county detox. But what they did is they took us to a lot of meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I began to know about the disease of alcoholism. But you see, the arrogance of the alcoholic. I love what Dave says. He says that Dr. T. Bolt talks about 2 characteristics found in every alcoholic, and that's grandiosity and defiant individuality. And he says, only an alcoholic can lay in the gutter feeling superior to those looking down on him. I was the kind of alcoholic, I went through this treatment center, and I will assure you that it was certainly, you know, beneath my station in life. Don't they know that I am an officer's wife? And I went into this, and they take us to rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thought that it was, you know, you guys were really nice, I liked the laughter, but my arrogance was, and my grandiosity, and my defiant individuality was, that people like me don't become alcoholic. And while I was in this treatment center, I had what we call in Texas, and you probably call it in Atlanta this too, a jitter house romance. You know, where sick falls in love with sick and you walk off into happy destiny. Well, we walked off into happy destiny for 58 days. I was 12-stepped out of a motel room in Euless, Texas by a man that would become my first sponsor. And this man, 12-stepped me, and he brought me back into that treatment center. And I was more dead than alive. I had been beaten up and numerous and sundry other things. And I had reached that place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Because now I knew what the problem was. The problem was sobriety. And you see, I have just defined the disease of alcoholism. I never will forget the first time I heard Clancy talk about the disease of alcoholism. I put that tape in my car and I nearly wrecked my car when he said alcohol has nothing to do with the disease of alcoholism. If alcohol were the problem, then detox centers would send out well people. The problem is the disease of alcoholism. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that the disease rests in the mind. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that alcohol is but a symptom. Because, you see, I am physically sober. I have been physically sober for 19 years. But I need the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous more than I have ever needed them, because I have a head that's out to get me. This head is out to get this body every day of my life. And I need the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because I need you to keep me in touch with reality. And you see, I didn't know that when I said sobriety was the problem, that I had just defined the disease of alcoholism. Because you see, I cannot live sober in my skin without the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, a loving God, and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't survive in this body with this head. I just can't do it. And I didn't understand that. But I knew that there's no way that I could live sober. I could not stand the woman I had become. I could not stand the mother I had become, the daughter I had become, or the wife I had become. And I've heard in these rooms that men hate what they've done and women hate what they have become. And I hated what I had become. And I knew that there was no way I could live sober. So I stayed the 7 days and I left that treatment center. And I got a bottle of scotch and I got a bottle of Valium and I checked into a motel room. I believe that everybody who sits in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous has an Eskimo in your life. And an Eskimo is someone who leads us to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I got sober with Eskimos. That's what we used to call them. And last year I went to Girl Talk down in Texas. And what I learned down in Girl Talk is they talked about angels. And Michael always talks about angels. And I believe we all have angels. And those angels bring us to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had an angel in my life. And she knew absolutely nothing about the disease of alcoholism, but she loved me. And she said that day that something came over her. And today I know that something was God working in my life through her. And she drove around until she found my car parked outside this motel. And I hadn't shut the door all the way. It was on a half latch. And she pushed that door open and she found me laying there. And on April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. Now, needless to say, that didn't take, because I'm standing here tonight. There's a priest around our town called Father Leo. And I think about some of the things he says, because he says there could never have been a resurrection if there hadn't first been a crucifixion. And in 1977, April the 8th was Good Friday. And I got sober on the following Monday. And so when Easter comes around, that's the time that always feels like it's my sobriety date, even though that's not what takes place. But I often think about how, you know, there's just no way. If you're dead and you shouldn't be alive and you've been pronounced dead, your life will never, ever be the same. You know, there's just no further. You don't go further than dead. You just don't go further than dead. You know, and I believe in divine intervention. We have a God in this room that can do anything. You know, God, as I understand Him, can do anything. And I'm so grateful for the divine intervention that I've had in my life and the gift that I've been given to be able to have this program and to have the life I have today. I'd like to say that was the last drink I ever took. But I ended up in a jitter joint. Not a jitter joint. I ended up in a psychiatric hospital. And then I ended up in a hospital in Dallas, Texas. And I was court committed to that hospital. And my court papers read, a detriment to myself and others. And they were signed by a Fort Worth judge. And I'm really grateful. So you don't have to want to come here. You just have to come. God does rest. You know, He does rest. I mean, I'm always hearing people, you know, just come on in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. If we don't do anything else, we'll screw up your drinking. You know, if we don't do anything else. So, and I didn't want to come. I mean, I was court committed. But I'm really grateful for the people who loved me enough to do what I could not do for myself. And on April the 11th, 1977, I entered that hospital. And by God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about great events will come to pass. And I just have got to tell you about my great events that have come to pass. I feel like I am absolutely so blessed. And on most days, not on just a few days, but today on most days, I know I'm God's kid and I know He loves me. And I'm really grateful for that. And I have a life today beyond my greatest expectation. When I was 3 years sober, I married my best friend. Now, I'm not a person who came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and became principled. Now, I was still one of these people that just knew if you loved me enough, I'd be okay. So I had to self-destruct and hit a bottom in Alcoholics Anonymous that was every bit as devastating as the bottom I had hit behind alcohol and drugs. And that was behind sex and relationships. And I'm really grateful to this program for people who love us no matter what. And Dave and I had been friends, just AA buddies. In fact, Dave had sponsored a lot of the guys that I had been, you know, so in love with. And, so he knew me, and he knew everything about me. Not necessarily from me. And David moved to Salt Lake City, Utah, and he was 4 years sober, and I was 3 years sober, and he came up to me, and he says, "Polly, I love you, but you need to get something straight. I don't want to have an affair with you. I want to marry you." And you see, things like that aren't supposed to happen to women like me. And Dave has taught me about unconditional love. Dave has loved me no matter what. And I don't believe I was that easy to love. But today, I believe that I am the very best wife that I could possibly be because you have taught me how to do that. And I'd just like to share some of the things that have happened since Dave and I have been married. I have been married to Dave, it'll be 15 years in October. Or maybe it'll be 16 years in October. 16 years in October. That's right. Gosh, how time flies when you're having fun. And we have learned a lot. Dave and I, neither one knew how to have a relationship. We both knew how to take a hostage, but we didn't know how to have a relationship. Now, I had been married for 22 years. So, man, I know how to be married. I know how to hang in there. I know how to be married, by God. I know my mother said, "You made your bed, now you have to lay in it." You know, and I knew how to be married. Now, Dave married a lot. And so here we are. And we wanted to do this. We wanted to have a marriage forever. And so Dave and I began to work at trying to understand how to have a relationship because neither one of us knew how to do it. Well, first Dave and I went to some therapy. Long about 7 or 8 years or so that we were married, we decided we'd go do some therapy. And so we got into this therapy, and it was all about finding your inner child. Now, I'm here to tell you that if you need to do these things, that's fine. But I say now I'm back to basics. You know how you never have to get back to basics if you never leave the basics. But if you leave the basics, you have to get back to the basics. So Dave and I went and found our inner child. Now, I want to report to you what I found out. I don't know what you'll find out, but I want to report to you what I found out. I don't need to find my inner child. I am desperately in search of an adult. And I'm here to tell you, I don't know how many more women are sitting out in this audience, But I am 55 years old, and I'm here to tell you to do menopause and adolescence all at the same time. What an order. What an order. And Dave and I sat down, and we had a conversation with Dick and Peggy, and we said, you know, we just like to learn about that. And Dick and Peggy gave us a set of tapes, and Dave and I went home, and we picked up the traditions, and we listened to these tapes, and we began to work the traditions in our relationship. And what we learned about that is that that works in any relationship, not just our marriage relationship. You see, I hear all the time in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that relationships is an alcoholic's number two problem. Well, you know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous gives us a recipe one more time, just like it gave us the recipe for the steps. And I don't know what you guys do, but in California, we read the traditions at every single meeting. And we always have this little blurb, that the traditions are to the group as the steps are to the individual. And Dave and I are a group. And what began to happen to us as a result of picking up the traditions and working my relationships has just been a great event that's come to pass. Dave and I have learned to let each other do whatever each other has to do. One of the things I've learned about loving someone is a lot of nasty character defects surface. And for me, the character defect that was the worst was that of jealousy. You see, if I think Dave is the greatest guy in Alcoholics Anonymous, I just knew that everybody else did too. Not everybody else, all the other women did too. And I'm one of these people that's blessed. I happen to sponsor the most gorgeous women in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the worst thing is they're all younger than me, and they're all thinner than me. And they adore Dave, and he adores them. And I had to realize that the only relationship that I need to pay any attention to is my relationship with God. Because you see, today that's my barometer. Those insecurities that I have as a result of jealousy are just a lack of faith. And today that's my barometer. If I start getting those icky feelings, I know that the only relationship that needs any attention is my relationship with God. Dave and I have learned to, Polly, you go be the very best Polly you can be, and Dave, you go be the very best Dave you can be. Dave and I are complete opposites. I am a motor mouth that nobody can get a word in edgewise. Dave is this quiet, kind of cool guy. And I'm one of these people that walks around with a remote phone because there's no way I could possibly be attached to a cord. And Dave is one of these guys that likes to throw a 40-pound pack on his back, and he likes to go around and walk on the top of mountains. And that does nothing for me. That does not sound like fun. Sounds like a whole lot of work. But what we've learned to do is we go let each other be the very best we can be. And what we bring back to that relationship is the very best of each one of us. And thanks to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you have taught us how to do that. And I am so grateful. And you know, Dave and I had been friends. We were friends for 3 years before we got married. And we've been lovers. And today, Dave and I are partners. And most of the time, that kind of a relationship comes out of some adversity. And about 3 years ago, I had my fist at God because Dave lost his job. And if, you know, it was getting kind of terse there for a while. And if, you know, if he didn't find a job pretty soon, it was, you know, we were going to lose our house. Now, I would stand up. You know, I was still invited to go speak either locally or out of town, and I would stand at the podium with this, you know, with this spiritual sanctimonia, and I would say, well, I just know that this is God's will, and this is what's going to happen. And you could just tell with the infliction in my voice, they just said, every one of you, please feel sorry for Polly. Look at what's happening to her. And I just couldn't believe that Dave wasn't going to find a job, and that sure enough, he didn't, and we lost our house. And I got my fist at God, like, Don't you see how much service I am in Alcoholics Anonymous? Don't you see how many people I sponsor? As though God is supposed to give me some kind of reward for staying sober instead of me having the grace of sobriety. I didn't get it. And Dave and I lost that house. And it hadn't been an easy road. Because it's still not easy financially. But the difference is how I feel today. A great event that has come to pass is the fear of financial insecurity will slip away. And there is without a doubt that I know that no matter what, God is going to take care of us. I know that today. And I would not have known that without that experience. I would not have known the friends and the friendships I have today if it were not for that experience. And I'm really grateful, because what that has done is that has Dave and I have walked through something that was tough. And by doing that, we have done nothing but grown closer together. And the thing that's been so beautiful about it is not one time did we get down on the other one. Not once. Because of what you have taught us to do in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And for that, I'm so grateful. That is truly a great event that's come to pass. I want to tell you quickly about my two sons. When I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I realized that my sons had been traumatized by a disease called alcoholism. My youngest son was a full-blown drug addict. And my oldest son was absolutely on a road of self-destruct beyond anything that I had ever seen that James was doing behind alcohol and drugs. He absolutely hated himself so badly that he was constantly trying to take his own life. And I realized that the disease of alcoholism, because their mother had a disease called alcoholism, I was absolutely a child abuser. I was physically not very much physically, but I've learned that physical abuse is nothing like emotional abuse. But I was so emotionally abusive to my children that I absolutely sent them a message: you are of no value. And thanks to this program and the steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was able to pick up the ninth step and go to my children and say, I am so sorry because I am a child abuser. And I didn't have to sit down there and say, you shouldn't feel that way, because you, by God, should feel that way. What happened to you and the feelings you have are very appropriate for what happened to you. And I'm so grateful to this program that you gave me the courage to change the things I could. And I'm so grateful that the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous give us the opportunity to walk and say, I'm sorry for the things that I have done. And today, if I get that wormy feeling inside my gut, I can assure you I owe an amends to somebody. And the biggest amends I ever had to make was to my children. And you see, those things don't heal really quickly. Russ continued to hurt himself, and he continued to take his life. And that's what I was saying about when I saw Melvin, because I was sitting that morning. I spoke in Albany. My daughter-in-law had called me and told me that my son had put a pair of scissors in his stomach. He was in the hospital one more time. Thanks to this program and a man that came up to me in Albany, Georgia. I have no idea what his name is. But he had somewhere along 40 years of sobriety, and he was in one of them old pair of overalls and these T-shirts that guys used to wear, you know, that undershirts under these coveralls. And he came up to me after I talked, and he said, young lady, you and I need to get into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We need to talk, and we need to read the chapter to the agnostic, and you need to know that God either is or he isn't. He is either all things or he's nothing. And that Russ is God's kid. And what God does with his kids is none of your business. And I'm so grateful to that man. Because with him and the prayers, the 11-step prayer, I was able to release my son. And my son hadn't tried to hurt himself in 7 years. But we were in school, and I'll tell you about our school in a minute, but we were in school one night, and one of the women I sponsor goes to school with us, and Drew looked over at Russ, and she said, my God, look at his arms. And you see, Russ has all these scars on his arms from trying to hurt himself. And what I've learned is that the wounds heal, but the scars remain. And Russ's arms are ever a reminder to me of a disease called alcoholism. And you see, the only difference between being that person that I used to be and the person I am today is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the only difference. When I was 6.5 years sober, my youngest son called me on the phone and he said, Mom, I want what you have. And 6.5 years before, I was supposed to attend a function at his school. And he said, don't you dare show up at my school because I am ashamed of you. And 6.5 years later, he wants what I have. My son James celebrated 12 years on January the 3rd in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's a great event. That's come to pass. A great event that's come to pass. And he's married to a lady named Kelly, and Kelly has 7 years in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And James is a member of Good Standing at the North Shore Alano Group in Evanston, Illinois. So if you're ever in Evanston, Illinois, look up a guy by the name of James, because that's where he hangs out. And I told you about my oldest son and the way that it used to be. But you see, Russ was the one who took care of me. And Russ was the one who would put me to bed at night. And Russ and Cheryl live right down the street from us, as I told you earlier. And they're expecting their first baby and our third grandchild. That's a great event that's come to pass. Now, I have to tell you about a really great event. I got lots of them, but this was the first really great event. Now, any of you out there who are grandmas and grandpas, we all know why you have kids, so you can have grandkids. And on May the 23rd, 1993, Ryan David Klinger Lee was born. Now, if you were down in San Diego at Bill W.'s big family reunion, Ryan was the main attraction. He's the cutest little blonde-headed guy, and he was running around, and everybody was just thought he was the best. Well, when Ryan was a year and a half, we got some really devastating news. We found out that Ryan's deaf, and I had my fist at God one more time. How can this be happening to me? Don't you see how much service I am in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous? Don't you see how many people I sponsor? But you see, one more time, my perception of reality was distorted. I had no idea the gifts that were being about to be bestowed upon us. And I ask, because these seats down here, it says hearing impaired. And I was so excited because I didn't know if anybody was signing or if we had hearing impaired here tonight. So I don't know if anybody's deaf, but if you are, God bless. Dave and I, and especially me, we were devastated about this little boy because he's so precious. And but what has happened as a result is that school that we were in, that we were I was talking about Russ's arms, is sign language school. And you see, this little boy has brought a family together that was torn apart by the disease of alcoholism, because you see, James comes from a family that was torn apart by a disease called alcoholism. Kelly comes from a family that was torn apart by a disease called alcoholism. And because of Ryan's deafness, and because we will not be able to communicate with this little boy unless we learn sign language, that little boy has brought together this family. And we're all learning sign language. James and Kelly's family in Chicago, and Dave and I and Russ and Cheryl in California and his other grandparents in Texas. This whole family has been drawn together because of this little boy. Now, that's not the only gift that's happened. Ryan has a little brother named Christian Landry. And because of Ryan's deafness, it's pretty normal for people who have had one deaf child to have another deaf child, or for something to be wrong with a child. So Kelly went in to have an examination to see if this baby was okay. And she found out she had an incompetent cervix, and she had to have a cerclage and be put to bed for 5 months. And we're clearly, all of us believe, that it's totally a gift from God that Ryan saved his brother's life. Because you see, Christian Landry was born April the 16th, perfectly healthy. The miracles of Alcoholics Anonymous. And Christian has already been to Disneyland. He's 8 weeks old, and he's already been to Disneyland. He's already been to California. He's already jet-setting. The miracles of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the great events that have come to pass. I hope with all my heart that you take this program and protect it as if your very life depends on it, because it does. I want the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to be just like it was when I came here 19 years ago. I want the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to be just like it was when James came here 12 years ago. Because you see, my friends, I think Ryan's going to need you. And I'm going to share that with you. We had to run some tests on Ryan to see the extent of his deafness. And when you have to do that, you have to put little babies to sleep. So we went in for the test, and they gave Ryan the medication, and nothing happened. And they gave Ryan the medication again, and nothing happened. And they gave Ryan the medication again, and he finally went to sleep. And he came to doing this, and that's more in silence. I want to share, and that's not a BS story, that's the truth. I stole it from James's story, though. And I want to tell you one more thing that has happened as a result of Ryan. About 5 or 6 weeks ago, I was speaking up in Rancho Cucamonga, which is a place in Southern California. And I went in, and the secretary comes running up to me, and he says, "Oh, Polly, I don't know what to do. This lady just came in. She's only 4 days sober, and she's deaf, and she doesn't read lips." And I said, "Mike, no problem. I sign." So you see, when I thought it was the worst thing that could happen, it has been the best. Every gift I have had that is the most treasured gift that I have is the things that I thought were the worst things that would ever happen to me. If you'd have given me a list of the things that I wanted in sobriety, I would have never had the nerve to ask God to give me the things He's given me. The husband I have, the friends I have, I would have never had the nerve. Because you see, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, left to me, I would have settled for so much less. Today I try to remember, when I go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, to not wonder what I can take from that meeting, but to see what I can give to the meeting. Because you have given me so much. And if I take that attitude, it's amazing how every meeting is just perfect. And for me, that's a great event. Because you see, I judged everything prior to coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And thanks to you, everything's in perfect order. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, left to my own devices, I'll self-destruct. The very best I could do for me is to get me pronounced dead on arrival. But thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I am the woman I've always wanted to be. Tonight, I am a woman who has loved one man with all my heart for 15 and a half years. And I have been faithful and true to that man. And that was something I could never, ever do. I am a person who is committed, I am committed to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am committed to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am committed. And I am a person who did not know how to be committed. And I am so grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I thank you so much because, you see, I am at my very best when I'm with you. You have done with me so much because I like to be with me today. And I love to laugh and I love to have fun. And I don't ever want to forget I cried. But I absolutely love to laugh. The greatest event that has come to pass is that my sons have told me, Mom, you're the mom we always wanted you to be. And I have a message from my son James. And he says, Mom, you go to Atlanta and you tell those people that your son loves you. That's a great event that's come to pass. When I was in Center Hospital, one of the counselors used to start every day with a prayer. And I, in my AA talks with it because it's what this fellowship means to me. I sought my God, I could not see. I sought my soul eluded me. I sought my brother, and I found all three. God bless. I love you.